Hello, Chameleon Chat listeners. Today I have Chelsea Cooper with me. Welcome, Chelsea.
Well, I'm excited to be here.
I'm glad. We'll just get started and have you tell us who you are.
Yeah. So one of my favorite things about Starbucks is that we do not call anything what everybody else calls it. So in the real world, outside of Starbucks, I would be known as a human resources associate or a human resources business partner. So I support all of our early and career talent programs for our finance organization. My official title is a partner resources associate. And that's because at Starbucks, we call all of our employees partners. So partner resources is what we call human resources. So whenever I introduce myself to someone, my title usually takes about a minute for me to explain because I have to explain what all the words mean in our world. I even have something different on my LinkedIn profile because otherwise nobody would know what I was talking about.
Great.
So in addition to, that's my full-time job, it's my quote real job, I'm also the co-chair of the Women's Impact Network, which is the Starbucks employee resource group focused around women. So we have a little over 1,000 members at this time in our chapter. So we have chapters all over the country. The chapter that I'm the head of is just here at what we call the Starbucks Support Center, which is that big building in Soto in Seattle with the siren on top.
Yes.
So that's essentially what I do at Starbucks. I do my real job and then I do the Women's Impact Network on top of that.
So how did you get into the Women's Impact Network? Was an extension of Starbucks?
Yeah. So I'm a 3-year partner, which is what we say. We're very big on anniversaries here, or workiversaries. So when I had been a partner for about 6 months, I had joined the Women's Impact Network when I started, and I had been on a team that was working on some policy initiatives, and I was looking for an opportunity to get more involved, and a program director role came open at with the Women's Impact Network. And it actually took, I think, like 7 to 10 conversations with different people about me even being interested in the role before I worked up the courage to apply. Funny enough, I had the experience in spades. I've actually been doing events since I was 15. So I've actually been doing events for longer than I haven't at this point in my career.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a lot of experience to bring to the table. I had a lot of ideas to bring to the table. But I still wasn't comfortable applying. I had to talk to so many different people who told me to do it before I would actually do it, which is very typical for women, is we tend to not apply to things unless we feel like we're absolutely qualified.
Yeah, or overqualified.
Or overqualified. So at that time, we elected leaders. So I essentially put in an application, talked about my event experience, talked about my background, and they were specifically looking for a program director to manage our event, particularly Women's History Month, which is in March. And I ended up winning the election. And so
congratulations.
Thank you. And so I had that role for 2 years. So I managed Women's History Month for WIN in 2017 and 2018.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. And it was very interesting because in 2016, I had a lot of feelings after the presidential election, and I decided that I was going to use those feelings for good. And so I poured all of my feelings into Women's History Month for 2017. So we actually did 9 events in 1 month.
That's impressive.
Which, when I made the presentation to the co-chairs at the time, they kind of looked at me like I was a little bit insane. And I'm pretty sure they were right, for the record. But it ended up being kind of the biggest Women's History Month that we had done before as an organization.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of grew and built from there. And then about 6 months ago, one of our co-chair roles became available. And at that point, we'd moved away from elections and toward an interview model. And so I applied for the co-chair role and I got it, which leads us to today.
Wow, that's a pretty nice resume. So I actually remember you talking about this at the Sigma Leadership Conference in April. That's where I had met you. You inspired me, but also everyone else that was around there, young kids and high school students. What made you want to target that audience?
Well, one of the things that I love most about my current job is I get to work with really talented, really driven young people. So I manage our early and career talent programs. I think I said that already. And we bring students in who are in college between their junior and senior year for internships. And then we have a program for students who are just graduating from college. And the thing that I like about that is that I get to help people figure out where they want to go. When I graduated from college, it was 2009. It was smack in the middle of the recession, and it was very bumpy for me graduating college. There were no jobs. And B, I had been a big overachiever in school basically since, you know, birth. And all of a sudden I was out of school and none of that really mattered. Nobody really cared what my GPA was. Nobody really cared what I had done. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, what have you done lately? And lately was I was a nanny because there were no jobs. And so what I like about my current role is that I get to help people make that transition. I get to help people have a softer landing and really, you know, build leadership capability from day one.
Yeah, and I think a rotational program, which is one of the programs I know you lead, helps with that because you get a bit of everything, get experience in all the different fields to figure out what you want. I really like that you help individuals develop and get to their goals. Yeah. And that's really cool.
And that's always been something that I've been really passionate about is just helping people grow, helping people get where they want to go, helping people figure out where they want to go.
Yeah.
And so that was one thing that really drew me to the Sigma Leadership Conference is this idea of, you know, if you want to change the world, if you want to change the future, you have to start with young people.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, you know, eventually everybody else is going to be dust and it's going to be the young people that are going to be building the future world.
Yeah. So wait, when you were young, who helped you grow?
Oh, so many people. I was very lucky in that I had several spare sets of parents, essentially.
All right.
I had my parents, but, you know, throughout my life, I essentially met different people who saw something in me, whether it was, you know, my organizational ability, who got me into events. I actually started with wedding expos, was how I started. And I actually met one of my first mentors, David Janowski, through swing dancing, which was something that my sister introduced me to. And he owned a company who did wedding expos and did wedding consulting.
Mm.
And so he essentially brought people in to help with the wedding expos. And that's where I really started to build my event experience.
That's really cool.
And then I went to college and, you know, I built on that experience and I worked for the Los Angeles Festival of Books. And then I built on that experience. And before Starbucks, I was working for the Seattle King County Clinic, which is, it's a clinic that happens here in Seattle in Key Arena. And it provides free medical, dental, and vision care to anyone who stands in line. And I can trace all of that professional experience back to David.
Mm.
And I've had several people, you know, have that kind of influence in my life. I've been very fortunate at Starbucks in that every manager that I've had has been very invested in my development.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm very close with my mother. She has always been, like, a major influence, which I think many, many people feel that way, especially women. But I also had all of these really amazing adults in my life as I was growing up. And I think that really shaped who I am today.
No, yeah. And that leads me right to my next question. Do you have any memorable experiences or a certain one that kind of determined where you were going to go?
You know, it's funny. Some people say, you know, you have three careers, I think is the joke. I think I'm on like five.
I think that's the norm career now. I feel like everyone at this point just switches until they're like, yes, I'm
yes,
good.
Exactly. when I was in college, I wanted to be a lawyer. My father was a lawyer. That was the plan, basically, since I was very, very young. And then I spent a year in a self-help legal resource center. I think I talked about this at the Sigma Leadership Conference. And oh my God, I hated it so much.
Really?
I don't have the emotional makeup for constant conflict. And, you know, it's interesting because you think about law as like, you know, you're helping, that's what I thought about it. You know, you're helping people. And in the end, what it actually was is I just felt like no matter how many people I helped, there were always more. And it made me feel like I wasn't making a difference.
I guess in such a big platform, you can feel pretty small.
Yeah. So, and I was doing it in Los Angeles at the Stanley Moss Courthouse, which is the largest courthouse in the world. So
yeah, I could understand why you would feel like you're not making an impact,
yeah,
essentially.
And then, you know, as I said, when I graduated from college, you know, I wasn't going to law school. So, you know, I basically took any job that I could get. I was a camp counselor. I was a nanny for a year. I was a waitress for a while. I had a brief foray into graduate school, which was a horrible mistake. And I ended up dropping out, which was probably one of the most difficult things I've ever done in my life because, you know, it's quitting. No, you know, you're not supposed to quit. And, you know, I ended up just kind of falling back on my event experience. And then when I came to Starbucks, it was the first time that I'd been in an organization that A, had absolutely unlimited opportunity. If you want something at Starbucks, if you want to grow in a certain way, if you want to develop something,
you can.
It's all available. All you have to do is do the work. And that was the point where I really started to think, okay, what do I want to do with my life? What do I want to do when I grow up? And I, as I said, had a very supportive manager. My first manager at Starbucks was named Brad Jones. He was a vice president in technology, and he supported me every step of the way, even when I wanted to do the program director for Wynn. And I was essentially saying, I would like to spend 20% of my time not doing this job.
Oh my God.
He supported me.
Yeah.
All he asked was, do you think you'll be able to balance it with your work? And I said, yes. And he said, do it. And that was it.
That's great. That's what you need. You need someone who like will support you and like not anchor you down.
Yeah. No, he's an incredible man. He's well known as an exporter of talent, but he's an incredible, incredible manager. I miss him sometimes.
Aww.
But you know, I really started to think, what do I want to do? And, you know, I've done Myers-Briggs several times. It's one of those, like, you know, personality assessment type things, you know, like shine and DISC. And, you know, so I'm an ESFJ.
I'm INFJ.
And what's interesting is when you look at kind of the breakdown for the ESFJ, it's basically like, you like people.
Yeah, great.
So I had always had an interest in human resources, but it didn't. I mean, I majored in sociology in school. I spent 4 years studying people.
Yes.
And so that was something that I had always wanted to explore, but had never really had the opportunity. And so I ended up being part of a human resources project that he was the executive sponsor for. And all of a sudden, I found it. Like, I found the thing. And it's interesting because I always thought that, you know, this idea that like you find like your one true job or your one true career that, you know, is going to make you happy. I always thought that was kind of not true. I always thought that was just something that people say.
And I kind of think it puts that out of perspective for people that you can't reach it sometimes. Like you have one thing in mind, you never get there. You'll always feel less.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't quite like that feeling.
Yeah. So. And then I moved into HR. And all of a sudden, I understood.
You're like, this is me.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's the same. It's almost the same way that I felt when I started dating my husband. Is it was like, oh, like this is easy.
Like it fit.
I mean, not easy. Like my job isn't easy, but it felt right. It felt like I was doing what I was supposed to do.
Yes.
Because I was helping people.
And that's at the core of what you wanted to do.
And that's at the core of what I wanted to do. And
same thing when you were trying to get into law school. It's at the core. Yeah,
exactly.
That makes complete sense.
And I mean, I do deal with conflict. I mean, in human resources, you always deal with conflict. You're doing employee relations. You know, there are sometimes some very difficult things that you deal with. Like, I'm a mental health first aider, for example. And I specifically did that program because I thought it would be useful in my job.
Yeah.
But
conflict is inevitable.
Yeah. But I also, you know, I get to help coach people and I get to help guide people and I get to be part of, you know, talent planning sessions where we talk about, you know, this one person, like these are their skills. This is how, you know, we can help them develop in the direction that they want to go. And so the thing I like about my job is it's a big mix. I don't really have a typical day or a typical week. I do a lot of informational interviews, again, with young people. And they always ask me that question, what's a typical day or a typical week? And I'm like, you know, I don't have one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I manage the rotational program. I manage our I provide pro support for our internship program. And I provide pro support for our continuing education program for the finance organization. And then I also provide pro support for some teams.
Wow, you do wear many hats.
I do wear many hats. I don't like to be bored. I like to always be busy. I like to always be doing different things.
Yeah, it keeps you on your toes.
It keeps you on your toes, and it keeps things from getting monotonous.
I also think that's a thing that a lot of women do.
This is true.
Yes.
You know what's really interesting? when I first realized when I was doing this project, when I was an executive assistant. We call them administrative assistants here, but they're actually executive assistants everywhere else. I actually really struggled when I first realized that I really loved this project and the HR might be where I wanted to go, because, you know, HR is severely, severely women dominated.
Yes.
Just across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very good at math and science when I was in school.
You didn't want to get lumped into something that was like, oh, almost, it's less hard, but it's in quotations, by the way.
Yeah. And it's not. You know, I almost felt like I was letting my gender down, because I was, you know, the thing that I wanted to do was the thing where you're like emotionally supporting everyone, and, you know, that's what women like to do. And, you know, it's I almost felt like I was conforming to a stereotype, and I felt like I was like letting my people down because I was pursuing this stereotypical thing. And so it was interesting when I first moved into HR, because I had to kind of deal with those feelings. And it was fascinating. It was a very interesting experience.
I couldn't agree more, but I also want to ask you, why do you think that is? Why do you think women feel this way?
You know, it's tricky, because there's a very strong belief in our culture that I personally happen to disagree with, that there are kind of key biological differences between the sexes. And I say sexes because gender is not binary and gender is not determined by hormones or anatomy. And I think that there is a component of, you know, maybe there is a component of women have higher emotional intelligence. But I'm not entirely convinced that it's biological, because if you look at, and again, this is going to be my sociology major coming out, so brace yourself.
This is great.
If you look at the research in terms of early, early, early development, and you look at how quickly from birth societal norms and societal ideas start to infiltrate. There was an experiment done, I think it was in the 1970s, but don't quote me, where they essentially had children and they presented them with two baby dolls, one white, one black. And they asked them to pick a doll based on different adjectives. And all of the positive adjectives, they chose the white doll. And all of the negative adjectives, they chose the black doll. Two-year-old children. So the socialization of what is good and what is bad starts that early. Mm-hmm. And you think about even, you know, even when people are born, you know, gender reveal parties.
What associates a color with a gender?
Yeah. And the thing that I always try to correct people on is you can't actually, the whole concept of a gender reveal, you can't actually know the gender of your child based only on its sex. Like, you can know the sex of your child.
Yeah, like you
said. And, like, it's likely that their gender will match because that's statistically true. But that's not a thing.
Yeah, I know. Like, if you think about it now, it's independent from, like you said, anatomy and hormones. So yeah. It is important to remember that now.
Yeah. And so, you know, we always talk about, oh, you know, women are more, you know, compassionate. Women, you know, have better communication skills. And, you know, maybe there is a biological component to it, but I almost think that that argument sort of is a little bit of a cop-out from a societal standpoint, is, oh, it's biological. That means that we don't actually have to address the gender socialization that we do on children before they're even born.
Yeah. And not even just address it, we don't have to do anything about it. Like, we don't have to control it.
Yeah.
We don't have to change it, because it's just inevitable. But it's not.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole point.
And so, you know, I think a lot about gender equity, and I think particularly in fields where representation is a struggle. I mean, I work in finance.
I was leading up to my next question. Like, you're in finance, and you do all this work with Women's Impact Network, and two different, how do you juggle that?
They're not separate. I bring my finance self pretty heavily.
That's awesome.
You know, I do things like I think about the makeup of our interview panels. I think about who we're bringing on campus when we're on campus recruiting for our programs. I reach out to Alpha. I reach out to NABA. Alpha, I can never remember what it actually stands for, but it's the Latinx group that's focused around finance. And then NABA is the Black group that's focused around finance. You know, I reach out to women's groups on campus. Like I intentionally make sure that my pipeline looks diverse, because once your pipeline is diverse, things get much easier. They don't get easy, but they get easier. Mm-hmm. They're not really separate for me. I think about everything holistically, and I'm always thinking about who is in the room.
I think if more people thought that way, we'd be in a better situation today.
I mean, I think so, but it's also the way that I think, so it's like a little bit, you know.
I mean, and you've been in the situation, like you've been around the field in the industry, so you know more. And I think that's something that a lot of people should know too. Yeah. So leading up to that, what tips or tools would you suggest to younger women or men?
So for younger women, you will be told a lot of things that will be very subtle. It won't be, well, you can't do that because you're a girl. It will be, are you sure you don't want to try this other thing? Or, you know, you seem a little emotional. I love that word emotional.
Sensitive
it covers all manner of sins. Like I love it when people say things like that.
You're so sensitive.
Thanks. Or like, you seem a little emotional right now. And it's so interesting because the reality is that when you are a woman, there is going to be a double standard. And that is something that you are going to have to deal with. I mean, I hope that future generations don't have to deal with it as much. But the reality is that anyone who's alive right now is going to probably have to cope with it their entire life.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
I feel like I wish that could change, but it takes time and progress.
Yeah.
I feel like we are progressing, though.
We are. And we absolutely, and every once in a while I'm feeling really depressed about the world, which truthfully is quite often these days.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
I'll call my mother, and I'll, because my mother was born in the 60s, and I'll talk to her about what things were like when she was my age, essentially. And those conversations give me hope for the world, I guess.
Because you can see how much has changed from someone who's been through the change.
Exactly. And I also believe very firmly that you can change the world. Never doubt that a determined small group of people can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has.
I do like that quote. It kind of reminds me of the Gandhi quote, be the change
you wish to see in the world. And that's how I approach my life, is I try to live the values that I wish everybody else did. And not everybody agrees with me. Not everybody, you know, there are many things that I've already said today that many people will disagree with, and that's fine. But I think that, you know, you have to do the work to actually support the things that you believe. Yeah. And sometimes you're successful and sometimes you're not.
But that comes with it. It's part of life. It's part of the thing. Like, you can't know the good until you kind of see the bad too.
Yeah.
So,
but getting back to your question, you know, advice for young people, you do not need to have it all figured out. Especially right now, there is a very strong push toward, okay, you're 15 years old. What's your life going to be? Like, all right, whole life. What's your plan? And, you know, it's not true.
No, it changes like all the time, weekly, maybe daily.
You're going to try things and you're going to fail miserably. And it's going to suck. And it's going to be okay, you know? In the end, it's going to be okay.
Resiliency.
And, you know, don't worry so much about knowing what you want to do, but really think about, you know, what do you want your life to look like? You know, what sorts of things do you enjoy? You know, work is always going to be work. There's always going to be parts of your job that you don't like. Oh, honestly, there's very little about my job that I don't like, but that's beside the point. There's always going to be parts of your job that you don't like. There's always going to be parts that are kind of like, you know, repetitive or boring. So it's not going to be awesome every day, and that's okay. but it should be awesome some of the time. Yeah. And hopefully most of the time.
Awesome enough to make you feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, find those things that bring you joy and really think about what are your values? What are the things, at Starbucks we say, what fills your cup? And the thing that I find really, this was actually one of the most useful things that I ever learned about myself, is think about when you go home at the end of a day, what makes you feel good and what makes you feel bad? And for me, and this was probably the best thing that I ever learned about myself, because I now tell every single one of my managers this, is for me, it is feeling useful. If I go home at the end of the day and I feel like I have been useful to at least one person, I will feel good about my day. But if I go home and I feel like I haven't been of use to anyone, I will feel terrible. Hmm. Which is one of the reasons I do so many things, is then I always feel useful.
Yeah, it gives you a chance, more opportunity to be useful.
Yeah.
That's good. You're putting yourself in the direction to success.
Yeah.
For yourself, like whatever that may be.
And, you know, above all, don't let people tell you that you can't do something because of a stupid reason. And above all, don't let people tell you that you can't do something, period.
Period.
Like, if someone says you can't do this, like, screw them. But if someone says you need more experience in XYZ in order to be able to do this, that's useful information. So it's not about you can do anything that you want at any time. There is still value in feedback.
Constructive feedback.
But don't let somebody tell you that you can't do something just because they don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah, or maybe they couldn't do it, so they put it on you.
Yeah.
You never know. People are like that.
And the last piece of advice that I'll give, and I always, people have kind of different reactions to this, but one of the most freeing things that I learned as an adult is that nobody really cares about me. Like, my friends and my loved ones, like, they care about me as a person. But, like, if I'm, like, walking down the street, nobody is thinking about me. Nobody is judging me. Nobody is looking at what I'm wearing, be like, oh, what are they wearing? Like, nobody really cares about you that much. And that's very freeing in some ways, you know, especially when you're young. And I was teased mercilessly in school. I actually think middle school is a preview of hell. I think if hell actually exists, it's being in middle school with a middle schooler's brain your entire eternity.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
But what I realized as an adult, which I wish I could go back and tell my middle school self, is that nobody really cared. Nobody was judging me. Nobody was looking at me. Everybody's so focused on what they're trying to accomplish and they're trying to figure out. Like, nobody has it figured out. Everybody is just faking it and hoping nobody notices.
Yeah, you feel like the spotlight's on you, but in fact, you're literally on stage with everybody else, yeah. And everyone is feeling the spotlight. Yeah.
And so that was very freeing for me, just this realization, like, nobody really cares. Like, nobody really cares about me. Nobody's looking at me. Nobody's judging me. Nobody really cares. That was very freeing.
I feel like you've definitely reached that state of liberty. I don't know if a lot of people are there yet, but I think it is a good direction.
It happened in the last 3 years. So I'll turn 32 in a few months, and it happened in the last 3 years. And I actually know several people who say that that feeling, that shift, happened around the same time in the late 20s.
Okay, so I just gotta wait a couple more years.
Which, you know, trying telling a 15-year-old that, like, it's fine, it'll be better when you're 30. It doesn't really go over very well.
No.
And to a certain extent, you know, you can tell, especially teenagers, you can tell teenagers things all you want, but, you know, there's a certain element of, there are some things that you actually do have to figure out on your own, and you do actually have to experience yourself.
Yeah. Until you don't, you're never going to understand the real impact or how you can change. Well, honestly, I feel like I could talk to you all day. It's kind of amazing how much knowledge we have. And
thank you.
Just, I've just sat here now and I'm looking at my paper with all these questions. And I'm like, I could go on, but we do have to end the podcast today. But I do want to ask you one thing. If you could go back, I know you said, like, if you could go tell your middle school self, but I'm talking about back maybe to a critical point in your career. Is there anything that you would change or alter?
I would minor in human resources or organizational management, and I would get into it when I graduated. I would make that my exclusive focus, and I would go back to school for that when there were no jobs, and I would get into this field earlier.
That's cool because you know you like it now. But is it also because do you feel like you lack some of the skills that you want or wish you had?
You know, it's, I feel, and part of this has to do with when I graduated from college. And I know a lot of people who are my age who feel the same way. You just feel behind because you essentially, you lose a few years when the economy is that bad and there are no jobs. You feel like you lose years because you didn't actually really start your career until you found that first, you know, professional job that you can put on your resume that you can start to build from.
Yeah.
And I do. I actually feel like I lost 3 years. And I would like those back. But I will say this. I think that struggle makes you a better person. I think that doing things like working in food service, working in retail, you know, being a barista, I think that they make you a better person because you realize that everybody is a person. When I go to restaurants and I, you know, pay my bill, I always tip well because I was a waitress and I know how hard a job it is. Because you end up seeing those three jobs I mentioned, you know, retail, food service, and barista, you see the worst in people in a really extreme way. And I think that going through that process of, you know, realizing that you have to do something and you have to just make it work, I think that it builds empathy and it makes you a better person.
Yeah.
So even though if I could, I would go back and I would change things, I also wonder if who I am today and the amount of empathy that I have for other people is partially because I had to go through that difficult time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's always an element of like, if you could go back in time and fix something, but then who would you be now?
The hardships made you who you are.
Yeah. I think everybody should be required to do retail food service or barista for at least 6 months in their lives. I think it just builds
character.
Skill.
All right. Or that. I mean, I was a cashier. Does that count?
That totally counts. Retail's a big umbrella.
I know. I was like, thank you, Chameleon Chat listeners. And thank you, Chelsea, for this amazing conversation. I had a great time.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
Awesome. Bye, Chameleon Chat listeners. See you in a month.